I've mentioned many times how much I enjoy hearing first-person stories from people who are having adventures or have had adventures that we have never had and will never have. Carter Andrus is just such a person. He has written a book called Contractor Combatants, Tales of an Embedded Capitalist. He is one of those private contractors that we have talked about so often on this show. There are 180,000 private contractors working in Iraq now. That's more than the 162,000 men and women of the U.S. military who are serving over there. Of that 180,000, about 20 or 25,000 of them are Americans. And unfortunately, yesterday we got the sad news that while we have lost 3,680 members of our military, they just got to the 1,000 mark when it comes to contractors, American contractors dying in Iraq. Carter lives and works in the Red Zone in Baghdad and is a very successful entrepreneur there. And so I've asked him to join us this afternoon on KMOX and talk a little bit about his firsthand experience there. Hi, Carter. How are you?
Good, Paul. How are you doing, sir? Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's nice to have you on here. Give me a little bit of background on who you are and what you're doing in Iraq.
And I'm the CEO of a U.S. Department of Defense contractor that works all over Iraq in support of key security services, providing logistics, food, life support, and construction for the Iraqi Army and the Iraqi police.
All right. Now, the delay and the quality of the signal here are a little sketchy because we are on a satellite phone to Carter. So you'll have to understand as we go through this that that is going to be one of the ongoing problems in this conversation. But we'll do the best we can here. Tell me from your time there, and you've actually been in country for a couple of years now, what is life like for an American there? You're not in the green zone, the heavily protected part of Baghdad. You live outside those walls in the red zone. What is life like for an American? Can you walk the streets there?
No, sir. That's not a good idea, the streets of Baghdad right now. We basically moved from one safe place to another safe place, heavily armed with low-profile Iraqi-type convoys. But the interesting thing about what I do here, and we're a fairly unique organization, American Iraqi Solutions Group, in that we are primarily an Iraqi organization. Of our 1,000 employees, 90-plus percent are Iraqi. All of my security men that I travel with are Iraqis, and they man my walls and do our business for us, and so we're somewhat of a transmission belt for the Department of Defense into the Iraqi economy in support of the Iraqi security. So it's a bit dangerous, but things are getting better.
Is your company responsible for doing the training of Iraqi police and army forces?
No. It's primarily a U.S. military function, although there are some contractors at SACOR that are involved with that. Just feed and house the Iraqi soldiers at various bases in the Sunni Triangle and in and around Baghdad.
So you employ hundreds of Iraqis, as you mentioned. What do they tell you about how things seem for them as citizens of that country now?
Well, I think the big word for the Iraqi, describing the Iraqis now, is exhaustion. And that's exhaustion with the different forms of the insurgency in Iraq. And so as a result of that exhaustion, we're seeing support for the various insurgencies, especially Al-Qaeda, which is the primary responsibility for the car bomb suicide bombings out there that really are what you see in the news so much and do the tremendous psychological damage out there. That's what we're finding is that they don't want to fight anymore and they're ready to move on.
They don't want to fight anymore, but isn't it at the point where they're going to have to fight eventually, and we, the American people, have been waiting for them to step up and fight so that our men and women in uniform and, frankly, some of our contractors like you can come home? When are they going to take up that role?
Well, that's you asking about the Iraqi people.
Yes.
Well, I spoke of the Iraqi people in general.
Yes.
Now, the biggest improvement that we have seen right now gives me cause for serious yet cautious optimism that we're going to win this is the fact that the Iraqi military is stepping up in a big way. We see them all over the place, risking their lives, checkpoints, patrol Baghdad. Matter of fact, in just within the last couple months, the Iraqis have ganked all the checkpoints that are manned by their forces and patrol operations center in Baghdad. So we're seeing order from chaos. If I may, for one more minute, the really great indicator of where things are going is what's happening out in Al-Anbar, which is where you have the former heartland of the insurgency where Al-Qaeda had operations. We see the Iraqi army out there, their boot camp, and prior to about months ago, it was primarily Shia being brought in from outside. Now we're seeing complete reports of Sunnis, and this is the sea in which the Al-Qaeda terrorists have swum in the past, and so that is drying up as we speak.
Carter, the first chapter of your book is called Ripping Off Uncle Sam in Iraq, which goes to the heart of one thing that we've been very curious about here at KMOX, which is how much fraud and corruption is there inside this world of Pentagon-approved expenditure, when people probably looked at it and said, ooh, here's a chance for me to get rich, and too many bureaucrats were too busy shoveling out the dollars to keep an eye on every single one of them. How much of that have you seen?
Well, when I initially got into Iraq in January 2004, I went to work for a company called Custer Battles. After I was there for less than a month, I discovered some fraudulent documents and became a whistleblower for the United States government and got them banned from all government contracting. I left that company after 2 months and started up American Iraqi Solutions Group, and we've been at it for over 3 years. We work under what's called the Federal Acquisition Regulation, as do all DoD contractors. Very carefully observed. As a result, there's actually been only one DoD contractor in Iraq banned from government contracting, and that was Custer Battles in the beginning. Because what we found is that the people that come over here to work are not just here because they want to find, you know, the riches that you speak about. Because it's, it's one thing when you're out there when the competition just wants to kill your business, but when it wants to kill you also, it takes a different type of motivation than just money. So primarily the DoD contracts that are over here are here for the mission and to make money. So I would say that the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, Stuart Bowen, will speak better for this than I can, but there has been very little corruption within the DoD contracting community in Iraq.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad to hear that you were able to expose one of these companies that was ripping off me and every other American taxpayer who was helping to fund that. Tell me a little bit about how it is for an American businessman to get along in Iraq, in a world where any day, you guys could be dealing with delivering things that are going to blow up.
Yes, sir. As I was saying, it takes a special motivation to be here, and really, it's a lot about the mission. I mean, most of us that are over here, in some way, shape, or form, were driven by 9/11. And, most of us are prior military. I was an infantry officer in the U.S. Army, and we're serving in a different way. And so as a result, we see the risk that's involved in what we're doing. And there's not very many of us in the first place that are actually doing what we're doing out here. And so we see the risk as something that's worthwhile in the greater scheme of things and being part of the mission of protecting our country.
But what about not individually, but as an entrepreneur and a businessman? How is the economy of Iraq treating you?
Well, to be an entrepreneur in Iraq, first of all, you have to look to security first. And that is a real challenge into itself. So there's not very many of us here that are being entrepreneurs. And the level of involvement from the entrepreneurial business community here is very small. And as a result, almost all of us that are over here as entrepreneurs are in some way, shape, or form connected with the Department of Defense. And so the business environment here one day will be tremendous. The entrepreneurial spirit is intrinsic to the Iraqi people. They're extremely hardworking and talented, and they're never, once we've gotten the security situation further stabilized, this environment, this business market, this marketplace is going to be something special as far as opportunity for in the true entrepreneurial spirit.
But while security is let's call it fluid in the best sense. How is it for the Iraqis who are trying to be entrepreneurial and start things up? I mean, are there people who are starting up businesses? If you walk down the streets, I know you'd have to do it with heavily armed guards to do that, but as you drive through these streets in your convoys, are you going past store after store after store after store newly opened in the post-Saddam Iraq?
It's amazing, really, Paul. This is Baghdad. Business goes on. The car bombs happen. The people mourn the dead, but business goes on. It is an incredibly busy city. We have over 100 different companies, subcontractors, and vendors that work for us all Iraq. One of the special aspects of AISG is that we can mobilize on a dime because we source all our construction materials, all our food, water, fuel, including labor, skilled craftsmen, engineers, out of Baghdad, out of the bazaar, so to speak, of Baghdad. And they are full to the brim with goods.
Are there American companies there?
Are there American companies out in the marketplace?
No, I'm talking about like McDonald's and Starbucks and Burger King and those kind of places.
No, only on the basis. Only on the basis. No, we're still in, this is a war over here still.
I mean,
it's a low-intensity conflict, but this is not a place that you want to start up a shop out there. Not yet.
So there's no Iraqi who's been applying for, no Iraqis are applying for a Steak and Shake franchise.
Well, no, I don't believe so. Not yet, sir. No, not yet. It's a little bit sketchy still out there to be doing that. No, sir.
I'm Paul Harris talking with Carter Andrus. He is an entrepreneur, a capitalist, a contractor. Contractor combatant, he calls himself in the title of his new book, because it's not just about business over there. It's also about security. He is a former infantry officer in the United States Army. And how often do you have to put your Army experience into your normal everyday life in the red zone in Baghdad, Carter?
Every day, just about. No question. We're we call our facility here, we have 11 houses in a big logistics staging area in downtown Baghdad. We call it Fort Apache because it's definitely an enemy territory, and the only thing between us and the bad guys are our internal assets. So a lot of what you do, I carry a weapon every day, and when I go out, I carry, take my AK-47, strap on my body armor, when I go out outside the compound. It's we have a significant security force. We have over 200 Iraqis working for us, and I inspect the guard every day. Part of my manager, my management team is a security director, and we are a military type organization that's in all the contracts. So we have a chain of command, and I'm at the top of it. And so there is every bit of my training as an infantry officer comes into play, and what we've been able to do here and what I do every day.
Had any close calls?
Several close calls over the years, but thank God, no serious injuries at all. So, we're very good at what we do, Paul. We, for example, in Baghdad, I mean, there's 500,000 cars driving around, and our vehicles don't all look alike. They're purchased in the Iraqi market, and so when we move, we look like just four or five packed with 15 or 20 guys with AK-47s, but we look like a bunch of people just going down the road. Separate, but not together. And as a result, we stay camouflaged and achieve surprise, and are attacked very rarely. But we have my people have killed some bad guys out there, and we have we've got in some firefights. And we've been very successful though at what we do.
Have any of your people been among the now 1,000 American contractors who've died over there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We've lost some people. We have lost some people, and God bless their souls. And they died for a good cause, and they're in the right place, I believe.
Tell me about other places in Iraq you've been to, like Fallujah.
Been to Fallujah several times. Been to Ramadi. Been to Al-Walid on the Syrian border. Been to Mosul. Been to Bakuba. I've been in every neighborhood in Baghdad, including Sadr City. I've been to Basra.
pretty much been all over the country, sir.
And I know that in the north, where the Kurds are, Kurdistan, America is virtually beloved. What's the feeling towards America in those other places that you mentioned?
Well, no one wants to see a foreign army patrolling their streets. I mean, there's no question about that. But what I've found, and it's growing every day, is that we share common goals with the Iraqi people in general here, and that is to move on to a peaceful environment with an economy that can become integrated into the world economy. These people just want to feed their families and move on, and they understand that there's no better partner in the world to shepherd them on that path than the United States.
As we understand it, back here at home, what you're in the midst of there is a lot of religious extremism, a lot of sectarian violence, a lot of just outright terrorism. Tell me a little bit about how Iraq is controlled when the Americans aren't there. We hear that the parliament there, the Iraqi government, has lost one-third of its members, that some of the Sunnis have walked out. What kind of control is there, either at a local or regional level, by Iraqis themselves?
Well, what we've been seeing here is a growth in professionalism, especially in the Iraqi army, which has been a main focus of our effort here, and is the exit strategy for the United States to pull its combat forces out of Iraq, is when the Iraqi security service can stand up and protect themselves. Now, this is happening, and we're a part of it. We feed and supply and build bases for the Iraqi army, and we're seeing what's happening out in the battlefield, so to speak, is that the sectarian aspect is much smaller than the perception out there is. The primary source of violence is through al-Qaeda, terrorist activity. And that is where the greatest cause for optimism here is, because what I was talking about, exhaustion amongst the people, is that they're tired of al-Qaeda. They're tired of the extremism. And so the Sunnis that supported al-Qaeda in the past are pulling away their support. So as Mao said, the guerrillas swim like fish in the sea. Well, the sea is drying up. Especially now, Al-Anbar, which is the heartland of the insurgency, and I was just out there at one of the recruiting bases out there, and it's all Anbari Sunnis joining the army. So when the Sunni Arab children are going in to join the government's forces, then that's a sign of real progress and reconciliation.
There are some in America, politicians and others, who have suggested that the way to fix Iraq is to split it up into three parts. Have the Kurds have their part, have the Sunni have their part, have the Shia have their part, figure out what to do with the oil revenues, and that should be the way Iraq goes forward in the 21st century. As a person who lives there and works with Iraqis every day, what do you think of that idea?
Well, it looks good. It looks good, in academia and in the halls of Harvard, but it's not practical on the ground here, especially in Baghdad. And as they say, where the capital goes, the country goes. This city is multi-ethnic. There's even a significant Kurd presence here. There's no way to separate that out without ethnic cleansing, and that's not going to happen. And not without genocide, along with it, which means there's no U.S. forces here present to protect the populace. And that's really, where we've evolved to. This is a country that identifies itself as Iraqis. It is a country that has an integrity within its borders, and that even with the Kurds up north, do not desire to leave Iraq, because it's a very dangerous neighborhood, and there is strength in numbers. And if this country were divided up, which I don't think is feasible, without massive killing, you're talking about confronting Iran, Syria, and Turkey with much weaker forces in three parts. So it's not practical.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with Carter Andrus. His book is Contractor Combatants, Tales of an Embedded Capitalist. His company is AISG, the American Iraq Solutions Group, a Department of Defense contractor. Does that mean you have to compete with Halliburton's Kellogg Brown and Root subsidiary for contracts, Carter?
Well, we have gone head-to-head with them, but they're a much larger scale operation than we are. We've done work for them as a subcontractor, but... Yeah, in a sense, they're the competition, yes, sir.
Are you essentially there as an entrepreneur and with 1,000 employees working under you? Are you there because we don't have enough people in our military to do the job? Or is this our military outsourcing kind of its non-military work to you?
Well, it's probably a little of both, no question about that. But it's actually a more effective way to move forward is because I've done a little bit of research on this, and we at least, as a result of our activities here, for one thing, we compete against others, so you get a better product at the end of the day than something that was just purely governmental. But we replace probably maybe between 200 and 300 U.S. soldiers here with what we're doing, and it costs somewhere around $250,000 to train and deploy a U.S. soldier. So we're talking about $50 million, and that's our total gross revenue this year. You know, from all our contracts, that's not including all the materials and that we deliver out to the site. So we're saving the U.S. government quite a bit of money in what we're doing. So I think it's a good way to go. Is there a question there about should there be more U.S. soldiers on the ground in Iraq? You know, you can always use more soldiers on the ground, but, we're getting the job done.
Well, no, I think the question is, you know, some people originally were talking about the coalition of the willing, and now it seems like it's almost the coalition of the billing, to borrow a phrase from some people who have been critical of this war, in that we're taking a lot of these jobs that used to be done, you know, by guys on KP and those sort of things, and said, look, we don't have enough personnel to handle that on a full-time basis, so we're going to hire some contractors and ask them to take care of it. Let's leave the business side apart for just a second and talk personally. Here. You are the CEO of this company. You spent a couple of years in country setting this thing up, and you talked before about how dangerous life is there. Why are you still there? Why don't you come home and run the company from here?
Well, there's a key component to leadership, and that's by example, I believe. And I've discovered here that one of the reasons why we're successful, where a lot of other companies have failed out there, there really has been a winnowing of contractors to the point where now we have the people that can really perform, is that we rely on our Iraqis. And one of the reasons why our Iraqis perform is because we share the risk with them on the road, on the sites. And if there's not that sharing of risk, then they don't perform. And so I think that's why I needed to be here. That's why I came back. I was called back. The company was going bankrupt again. And people were starting to get dead, and I had to come back. You know, I love my Iraqi brothers, and I just couldn't let it. I couldn't let the company fail.
You've got a wife, a son, a daughter. Are they there with you?
They're actually en route to Amman, Jordan. That's where they live now.
How often do you get to see them?
A couple months. Yeah, just the heck out of what it used to be, which was every 90 days.
People are wondering how long Americans are going to be there, and I think when they ask that question, they're talking about American soldiers. How long do you think your company is going to be there?
As long as the Iraqis will allow us to be here.
And do you have a time frame in your mind for how long the American troop forces will remain as high as they are before they can finally start coming home in some numbers?
Well, what I see out there right now, and you know, we're close to the Iraqi security services, so I think we can start pulling out substantial combat forces within a year.
Within a year. That's good news for everybody who's in a military family back here stateside. If you go to my website, harrisonline.com, you will find a link to Carter's book. It's called Contractor Combatants, Tales of an Embedded Capitalist. It is quite a read from somebody who is living life there, not as a soldier, but as a businessman with a gun in his hand every single day. Carter, I appreciate you taking the time to tell your story today on KMOX.
Paul, thank you so much. I was honored with the opportunity, sir. Thank you.
Carter Andrus here on The Paul Harris Show.